Now on The Pulse, it's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already November 18th and 19th. We had a beautiful Veterans Day program last weekend with Renee Pluma, who was really the initiator in what we call Hurricane Renee for the what we do at the Farnham Center for Veterans. She and her husband have a foundation related to dealing with drug addiction for veterans at the Farnham Center. She's also the head cheerleader of an organization called Veterans Count, which is an organization that basically takes care of veterans and their families when issues appear. So, for example, you know, a spouse goes off to Afghanistan or wherever, but, you know, back at the ranch, the house still leaks, the roof still leaks, you know, the septic tank still explodes, the teenage kids still are at odds with each other, the electric bill needs to pay, you still get sick, so navigating the VA healthcare system, et cetera, so there are care coordinators at Veterans Count. So a big shout out to Renee. And I also want to put a big shout out to Dr. Mitch Curray, as well as Dr. Shannon Farrell at the Easter Seals Dental Center, because on the day before Veterans Day, on Friday, November 10th, we had a day at the Easter Seals Dental Center where veterans in need of dental care, we had over 50 show up, and we took care of their dental needs. Thanks to Dr. Shannon Farrell, Dr. Mitch Curray, Delta Dental, and also a big shout out to the Manchester Transit Authority, who on that day allowed veterans to jump on the bus, get down to Auburn Street and back home, because sometimes the challenge faced by veterans is not only the oral health issue, but also transportation issues. And speaking of oral health, I am with a renowned dentist, Dr. Don Cox, who works with me at Northeast Delta Dental as our dental director, does a great job for us. So, Don, this is given, you know, where we are in terms of the oral health for veterans. I think it's been a really hot topic lately. I've had a few op-eds on it. But let's just talk in general about, you know, oral hygiene. Obviously, you know, for years we've been told, get to your dentist, you know, twice a year. But obviously, you know, the brushing and flossing in between probably is as important. So tell us, what is the purpose of oral hygiene and how it is, you know, connected to overall health?
Well, Tom, oral hygiene is probably not at least as important. It's probably the most important thing you can do. Dental decay and periodontal disease are two main dental diseases that people get that cause loss of teeth. Dental decay is caused by bacteria that live on teeth above the gum line. Periodontal disease is caused by bacteria that live below the gum line. In both cases, oral hygiene is the answer. Oral hygiene removes those bacteria, which build up, from what we know from science right now, in 24 to 72 hours after you brush your teeth. So going to the dentist is not a solution in and by itself, because the dentist is going to see you every 6 months. Your bacteria are building up within 24 to 72 hours, so obviously something has to happen in between. And that's you. That's you brushing your teeth and flossing your teeth.
So how should we brush? You know, is there, you know, we've got electric toothbrushes, manual toothbrushes, of course. Sometimes when I've asked one of your colleagues, you know, Dr. Shannon Mills, this question, you know, his answer is whatever makes you brush your teeth, that's the one to use. So what's your view on it?
Actually, Shannon's quite accurate.
Great.
Consumer Reports published an article a few years ago on toothbrushes, and their conclusion was that manual and electric were equally effective. Now, that doesn't mean we don't recommend electric occasionally, only because it's a motivator in some cases. You know, a teenager might spend more time brushing their teeth or might do a more thorough job if given an electric brush. But if you brush equally well with both, the job will be the same.
And How often should you change a toothbrush? As you know, we sponsor a lot of road races, and we always give out, when we're sponsored, usually in a goodie bag, we put a toothbrush. I have more people tell me that they love the road races that we sponsor because they want to get that toothbrush. My own view is people don't change their toothbrush enough, but tell us what the scientific evidence suggests.
this is something that's rife with misinformation. I've watched a show on The Doctors once that supposedly had an infectious disease specialist that recommended changing it every few weeks. However, the truth is that the bacteria that are on your toothbrush are your bacteria. As long as you use your toothbrush, those bacteria aren't dangerous to you because they're already in your mouth. The recommendation is that when you brush your teeth, you rinse your toothbrush off thoroughly and let it dry thoroughly before you use it the next time. Most of the bacteria, 99% plus, die by themselves on a dry toothbrush. When we really recommend people change their brushes is when the bristles start splaying back. If you look at an old toothbrush, the bristles aren't straight any longer. And when they're not straight, they don't get into the gingival sulcus as well as a new toothbrush would. And therefore, they don't remove the bacteria as well as a new toothbrush would. So at that point in time, when you look at your toothbrush in the bathroom, you see the bristles looking old, change the brush.
Got it. What about mouthwash? I'm old school. I like the gold Listerine. So many people use mouthwash. They use the blue stuff, or maybe that tastes better than the old school Listerine. But what's your opinion on mouthwash, and what about mouthwash that contains alcohol?
Well, most scientists now believe mouthwash is not essential for anyone. Listerine did get an ADA seal of acceptance because it reduced gingivitis. But what they don't say in their advertising, it only reduced gingivitis in people who don't brush and floss properly. In people with good oral hygiene, the study showed that mouthwash didn't reduce gingivitis any further than anything else. The alcohol in the mouthwash is potentially harmful. The Australian Dental Journal a few years ago published an article listing mouthwash with alcohol as a possible culprit in the initiation or causation of oral cancer. We've long known that alcohol ingestion to the excess is associated with oral cancer, and chronic mouthwash use with high alcohol content. And by the way, Listerine can run up to 56 proof in some of their versions of mouthwash. Might be associated with oral cancer. It's still a matter of debate. The National Cancer Institute, on their website, this is a part of the National Institutes of Health, had a warning for people to avoid use of high alcohol mouthwashes. Because of that, most of the companies now have come out with low alcohol mouthwashes, but with that, the ADA seal has been removed because the efficacy seems to be the alcohol and the essential oils that are solubilized by the alcohol in the mouthwash that reduces the gingivitis.
So tell us what xylitol is, is it effective in reducing caries exposure?
That was the hope and the expectation, and the science made a great deal of sense. But within the past few years, as the subject of xylitol was examined, and most recently by a Cochrane analysis looking at all the literature in the field, the conclusion is that it has no clinical benefit that it offers the patient at this point. It's contrary to what the expectations were. Xylitol is not metabolized by strep mutans or any of the other oral bacteria that metabolize sugars normally to create acid, which destroys its tooth structure. So it was expected that xylitol would reduce caries. It, right now, we don't think it does.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So we've got a couple minutes before the commercial break. So obviously, you go into a supermarket or a drugstore, and there's a plethora of different types of toothpaste. One that claims whitening, you know, one that has, if you have sensitive teeth, one if you have, you know, sensitive gums, et cetera, et cetera. So the one thing I would say is probably you want fluoride in the toothpaste, but beyond that, it probably doesn't make a difference. But tell us your view on that.
Well, toothpastes have a long history, so some of them not so beneficial. the wide use of toothpaste probably began around the mid-1700s. The first use of toothpaste was actually before toothbrushes, you know, about 5000 BC. But the modern toothpaste that we think of today, probably about mid-1700s, there was some...
So we know this from Egyptian mummies or something, that they used it 5,000 years ago?
Actually, yes.
Cool. All right.
You know, some of the toothpastes have been extremely potentially harmful. There was one around the turn of the century, just about when my dad was born, around the turn of the 19th, 20th century. It was came in a jar and was widely used. It was guaranteed to whiten your teeth. Toothpaste between the 1700s and 1800s and 1929, 1930, came in jars, some of which were called pot lids. There were small jars. Some were larger jars. This one was in a larger jar. And you'd dip your toothbrush into it, and you'd brush your teeth, and it was guaranteed to whiten your teeth. As it turned out, it really did. It did a wonderful job of whitening your teeth, but it turned out it was hydrochloric acid in a paste with a flavoring agent.
Wow.
So it was a family-owned business, and the family was scared to death of going bankrupt. And they decided to remarket it. So a few months later, or weeks later, I don't know which, it appeared on store shelves again with a new label pasted over the old label, called so-and-so's toilet bowl cleaner.
Oh, my God. From toothpaste to toilet bowl cleaner. We've evolved from that, I hope.
But, so, but it doesn't answer your question about modern toothpaste. But, you know, Tom's right. The most important ingredient in a toothpaste today is fluoride.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffia. With me is Dr. Donald Cox, the great dental director at Northeast Delta Dental. And here we are on November 18th and 19th of November. Last week's show on Veterans Day, we had Renee Plummer talking about Veterans Count. And again, that's an organization that helps veterans in need or their families. Spouse goes off to Afghanistan. You know, the roof still leaks. You still have to navigate the healthcare system. So the great people at Veterans Count can be reached at 315-4357. The week before, we had Jenna Raisis, who is the deputy general manager of the Fisher Cats. And that's quite timely, because if you're listening to this on November 18th, tonight is the Granite State Baseball Dinner in Manchester. So you can check it, NewHampshireFisherCats.com, and see if there are still tickets for the baseball dinner, which is at the center of New Hampshire on November 18th. But back to oral hygiene and Dr. Cox. So we've heard a lot of potential about caries, vaccines, and other methods of preventing tooth decay. So what's the latest? I know there's been a lot of research. We've invested in a company called C3 that's doing some research into that. We've also spent a lot of money and time on saliva research. So tell us what's the latest on preventing tooth decay.
Well, the caries vaccines go back, I think they probably reached their high point, at least in funding, in the 1970s, early 80s. There was a lot of hope that a vaccine could be created to an enzyme that the main bacteria that's thought to be causative in caries, Streptococcus mutans, uses to create a matrix on the tooth that allows it to stick to the tooth, called glucosyl transferase. So a great deal of effort at multiple laboratories around the country, funded by the National Institutes of Health, was expended on developing a vaccine to this glucosyl transferase to try to keep the bacteria from sticking to the tooth surface. The idea being that if it doesn't stick, even though it creates acid when it sees sucrose and other refined carbohydrates, it wouldn't cause caries or tooth decay. Well, it seemed to work somewhat effectively in animals. Actually, I took the vaccine back. I was one of the first recipients, and it wasn't to reduce caries. We were monitoring antibody levels at the time. We were able to raise antibody levels, but in actual clinical trials, it was proven to be relatively ineffective, even though in rats it was quite effective. Rats can be put on diets of Diet 2000, which is a sucrose-rich diet, and they too, like us, get dental decay.
Interesting.
That's sort of gone by the wayside. There is still some development in monoclonal antibodies, and there's a firm that's looking at that right now. There's a Jeffrey Hillman down at the University of Florida. They actually started up in Boston at the Forsyth Center, who's developing strains of strep mutans that don't cause caries that called replacement therapy, where you can introduce these bacteria into someone's mouth, and they actually will take over the flora of the normally present strep mutans, and wherein they might adhere to the tooth, they don't cause tooth decay. And that's been going on for many years, but it's moved very rapidly just recently with a patent being issued by the federal government in 2016. So that's something to watch right now.
Why are some people more prone to periodontal disease, gum disease, and tooth decays, and tooth decay, and others aren't? So this, obviously you can take care of your teeth, as we've already talked about, but it must be something related to genetics as well, perhaps?
You got it.
All right.
Given all factors the same, such as smoking history and such, it's genetics by and large. Certainly with caries, increased use of refined carbohydrates. Sucrose can be metabolized by strep mutans to make that matrix that causes it to adhere to the tooth. Other carbohydrates, monosaccharides, disaccharides, even starch, which is converted to carbohydrate in your mouth. There's an enzyme in your saliva that converts starch from bread and such into refined carbohydrates, maltose, which can then feed the strep mutans to make lactic acid, which demineralizes the tooth and causes tooth decay. In periodontal disease, people are genetically susceptible, but smoking history, lack of oral hygiene, all these are moderating factors that can aggravate the situation. But the like heart disease, like stroke, the single greatest factor determining whether you're going to have a lot of caries or you're not, or you're going to have a lot of periodontal disease or not, is genetics.
Who your mom and dad were. But of course, we can help that by eating right, brushing and flossing, going to the dentist.
But in someone who's very susceptible, it's still the case that if they brush and they floss, even in very resistant cases, you can control the disease very, very well.
I got that lesson. I was at a Delta Dental meeting. There was a professor from University of Kentucky Dental School, I think it was, and he showed this picture of a person with this beautiful white teeth, and then he showed another picture juxtaposed, person with sort of yellowish teeth and crooked and whatever. And so his question to the audience was, which one of these two have the better oral health? And of course, everybody picked the one with the beautiful smile, whatever. It turns out that person was filled with caries, and the one with the yellow teeth and crooked teeth was perfectly sound, because, again, that speaks to the genetic type. So that reminds me, Shannon always makes me laugh when I have him, because he always says that sometimes the movie stars and athletes that have these big, bright, white teeth, it's almost too much, because the natural color of teeth is really a little bit more off-white, or right?
I mean, yeah, I think the biggest problem dentists have when putting crowns on anterior teeth or fitting dentures to patients is the patient always wanted white teeth. They ask for white teeth. But if you actually put white teeth in their mouth, they look inappropriate and it draws attention to them. And your teeth aren't white.
Good point. So thank you for clarifying that. Machinin always makes me laugh the way he describes it. So tell us about gum issues, because some of what we call the young invincibles, they may have great looking teeth, and maybe because they grew up with fluoridated water and do brush and floss and go to the dentist regularly, and maybe they don't have any caries, but as they get a little older, sometimes perio is kind of what we call the silent issue. So why is it a perio issue or gum issue can sort of creep up on us, even though we might think we have good oral health?
periodontal disease, which is loss of the attachment around the tooth, frequently is not visible to the patient or to the dentist just looking casually at the patient. That's why we use radiographs to see bone that's disappeared around a tooth that holds the tooth in place. It's not visible if you're just looking at a person. A patient looks in the mirror, they might not see anything abnormal. Sometimes the first sign when a patient would come to see me, the first sign that they're having a problem would be the teeth are getting loose.
Literally loose.
You don't usually have loose teeth until, you know, we say about 50% of the bone is lost around a tooth.
So that expression, long in the tooth, tell us how that the derivation of that, because that sounds a little bit like what we're talking about.
Well, that's actually gingival recession. Now, in a few individuals, you know, people can get periodontal disease without having recession. Those are the cases that look normal. You don't see anything wrong. Maybe the teeth are getting loose. Maybe they're falling out. But the teeth look normal, and you don't know there's anything wrong unless you try to wiggle the tooth, and all of a sudden, wow. Some people genetically develop simultaneous gingival recession. As they lose attachment or lose bone around the teeth, the gum recedes and keeps up with that bone. And that's where the expression long in the tooth really came from. It means getting older. We don't usually see periodontal disease until you're about 30 years old plus. People in their 20s don't have periodontitis. They don't have bone loss in general, except in rare cases. There are childhood forms of disease. One used to be called periodontosis, then it was changed to juvenile periodontitis. But these are young kids, 14 years old, that can be actually losing teeth at that age.
Wow. So we have a couple of minutes. We have introduced a program in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont called Health Through Oral Wellness, or HOW. And it's powered by a software program we call Previsor, and that's a software company that we bought, meaning Northeast Delta Dental, a couple years ago. And now in most of our dental programs now, based on your Previsor score, HOW score, if it's 3, 4, or 5, you may be entitled to, you know, additional cleaning in the calendar year, a Del Floride varnish. I was in the dentist's office the other day. My score was 3. I'm not violating HIPAA because I'm self-reporting. So it was great. Right there and then, the hygienist scheduled me for an additional cleaning. And then as she finished up, she applied the Adel Fluoride varnish. So will the Previsor program, or HOW, will that help on this on sort of surfacing, you know, perio issues?
Actually, just had a conversation with Dr. Mills yesterday about the very subject. Yes, I think so. And as we move forward, dentists have difficulty in determining sometimes whether treatment is necessary, not necessary, given the parameters that we have to look at, which are radiographs and periodontal charting. HOW goes a few steps further and allows us to identify activity of disease and prognosis of disease with time. Using these indices from HOW, it's hoped that in the future we can move to determining specifically what kind of treatments might be indicated, whether scaling and root planing is required. You know, scaling and root planing, just because you've had a history of periodontal disease doesn't mean you need it now. Some people will, some people won't. To identify which of those people need it and which don't, HOW could be instrumental in doing that.
Tom Raffio return next weekend with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.